So what did we discuss in our previous class? Was anyone here last time? 1 week ago. Because last Monday was the exam, so obviously. But 1 week ago, last Saturday.
Just turn that off.
Ask these managers to please. Some jogi or something? Yeah. It's too much noisy. Maybe they can go and speak some words. What is there in regards to? Say please, we're having a class if they can. Any other points?
No, I don't know. You have to the earth has a life and the Lord has father.
Okay, like that. Yeah. Any other points?
You can understand the Lord by others, the big father.
Anything else?
Chavidra is the most merciful form of the Lord, in which conditions known as Chavidra also approach the Lord without much qualification.
Which section was that in reference to?
It was, I think, another problem in the same class. Because this, in Chavidra form, Lord is very merciful, so that when the most conditions known can come and approach.
The context I think was the Lord is appearing as a boat, so he comes in any of the forms. In that context, Ashima was studying Bhagavan. Out of all the forms of the Lord, actually the form is the most common. Anyone can.
Okay. Any other points?
Sankirtan has gave the most easiest chagya to perform.
Even the residents of Jana, Tapa and Satyaloka were purified by the water sprinkled from the shoulder of the Varadev. We should not think that Varadev's body is contaminated or anything. Pure transcendent.
So we see at the beginning of the chapter that Swayambhuv Manu speaks to his father, Lord Brahma. Now, his attitude towards Lord Brahma is a perfect attitude. And it teaches us the perfect attitude that the disciple, or the son, or the daughter, must have to the superior personality, to the guru, to the father. So because his attitude was perfect, And he had a perfect service attitude towards his preceptor, Lord Brahma, his father. And Lord Brahma gave him all benedictions, all blessings, that he would be fully successful in his service. And he gave him the instructions that you please populate the universe on my behalf, teach the system of Varnashram Dharma to all the living entities, and teach them how to perform yajna. And in this way, all the living entities within the universe will be purified and benefited and shown the right path for liberation. So then, Swayambhuva Manu agrees to his father's instruction. The instruction that he agrees to follow. But then, looking down throughout the universe, they discover that the earth has sunk into the Garbhodaka ocean. And therefore, it is not possible at this point in time to begin populating the earth. So, Lord Brahma begins to contemplate what to do. But he realizes that he must be very patient and surrender to the Lord and wait for the Lord's instruction or the Lord's.
Intervention.
Or the Lord's. So he waits for the Lord to give some sort of. You know what I mean? Like that. I can't think of the word. Yeah, some guidance like that or like that. I can't think of the exact word. But he waits for the Lord. And then suddenly, from his nostril, a boar appears, comes out, which is the half the size of the end of his thumb. And this boar suddenly expands to the size of a gigantic elephant, and then the size to a giant mountain, right before everyone's eyes. And then the sages and Lord Brahma begin to debate upon who that boar would be. And they understand that it is actually the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. So, they begin to offer prayers to the Lord. The Lord roars in transcendental ecstasy to give pleasure to his devotees. And then the Brahmanas, the pure sages, they begin to respond to the Lord's pure transcendental sound, his boar-like transcendental sound, with Vedic prayers and hymns in order to respond to the Lord with great feeling. And then the Lord dives deep within the ocean, the Garbhodaka ocean, and picks up the earth and places her back in her orbit, back in her position, like that. So we see from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, this is the first of the incarnations of Krishna who are fully described. Different incarnations have been mentioned so far since the first canto, but none have been described in detail. This is the first of the incarnations. Now, why is it that this particular incarnation is described first? To give us the understanding that whatever form the Lord takes, the Lord is fully transcendental. He is such Chit Ananda Vigraha. He is not an ordinary personality, but he is full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. He is fully spiritual, fully potent personality. So, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we see the Lord being described in this way, so that we will be trained with our intelligence, and our intelligence will be purified and spiritualized, so that we can understand Krishna's pure spiritual existence when we enter the pastimes of the 10th canto, and we come to Krishna's pure pastimes in Vrindavan as a cowherd boy. So now we'll begin tonight, chapter 14, and we'll do verses 1 to 17, and we'll see the pastime begin to unfold as to why Lord Boar fought with the demon Hiranyaksha. It was mentioned very briefly in chapter 13 that when he dived into the ocean, that at that time he killed the demon Hiranyaksha, but it was only very briefly mentioned. Now, Vidura will question Maitreya and ask for details about this pastime. So now Maitreya will give a deep explanation about this pastime, which will now cover many, many chapters. So this is a very instructive section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Very wonderful pastime which takes place here.
This more incarnation appears in every day of Brahma?
Well, it would appear so.
That means that the four Kumaras have to go to Sri Vaikuntha in every day of Brahma and curse Jain Vijaya?
I don't think so. I don't. Or maybe they do. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's not that the pastimes have to take place the same every single time. But they may. There's no. I don't think there's any mention of what takes place in Sankara.
I thought it appears in the beginning of Brahma's days and then in the middle. It is.
Yeah, there's two incarnations which are mentioned. Yes. This will be described in the beginning of this chapter also.
Yes. But does he appear every day?
It would appear so, because Krishna appears once in a day. So it would appear that he appears every day. Okay, so now chapter 14. Chapter 14 is called Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. All right, very instructive chapter. Now, hands up here if any of you are married. Okay, quite a few of you. Okay. So on Monday night, there'll be very important instructions given to the grihasthas. So please bring your husband and your wife. If you have a husband and wife. And if you don't have a husband and wife, then just bring your husband or your wife. Okay. But please bring them on Monday night. Because there'll be very important instructions on grihastha dharma, which will be given. Like this. All through these chapters, actually, these chapters here are very relevant for grihasthas. The union of Kashyapa and Diti, and then further in the Bhagavatam, in third canto, then there will be the pastime between Kadama and Devahuti. This is also very instructive for grihasthas, and we may not get to that this year. That'll probably be next year that we'll get to that. But this, at least this year, we can get through Kashyapa. So we'll discuss this. Shukadev Goswami said, after hearing from the great sage Maitreya about the Lord's incarnation as Varaha, Vidura, who had taken a vow, begged him with folded hands to please narrate further transcendental activities of the Lord, since he, Vidura, did not yet feel satisfied. Sri Vidura said, O chief amongst the great sages, I have heard by disciplic succession that Hiranyaksha, the original demon, was slain by the same form of sacrifices, the personality of Godhead, Lord Bor. Such a brutal king.
As referred to previously, the Bor incarnation was manifested in two millenniums, namely Samyuga and Chakshusa. In both millenniums there was a boar incarnation of the Lord, but in the Swayambhuva millennium he lifted the earth from within the water of the universe, whereas in Chakshusa millennium he killed the first demon, Hiranyaksha. In the Swayambhuva millennium he assumed the color white, and in the Chakshusa millennium he assumed the color red. Vidura had already heard about one of them, and he proposed to hear about the other. The two different both incarnations described are the one Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So just to give clarification here, the acharyas are commenting that there are two different boar incarnations. Reddish boar incarnation, whitish boar. Sometimes Lord is appearing in whitish form of boar, Varaha, sometimes appearing in reddish form, like that. So Maitreya is mixing both the stories, like that, in order to bring out relevant points. Like that. But is the one personality, the details are differing in the pastimes, so he's mixing it together so that we get the full benefit of hearing the pastime. Okay. 5.
With the first verse, it is mentioned Vidura having taken a vow. What vow did he say?
After hearing from the great sage Maitreya about the Lord's incarnation as Brahma, Vidura, who had taken a vow, begged him with folded hands to please narrate.
Is it the renounced order?
Dridavrata, taken to a vow. Maybe in regards to when he left the palace. In regards to that, that would be my guess. Like that. Dridavrata. Dridavrata means determined vrat. Like a determined vrat. Like that. So he's very determined. When we went back to chapter 13 of the first canto, then it was a very determined vrat that he left the kingdom with. Like that. If you have a look at the past song of Vidura in the beginning of the third canto, like that. Very determined vow that he left the kingdom. So that would be my guess.
Really determined to know about the Lord.
Yeah, like that also. Okay.
I just wanted to add to it.
Yeah.
Other people, the priest mentioned that this is a Shvetavaraha Kalpe. When they say this must be the Swayambhu Mandiri Mandiri. I heard them. They say.
Vaivasara
Mandiri. And then Shvetavaraha Kalpe, they say. So Shvetavaraha is a white gold. So is it mentioned anywhere that this is Shvetavaraha Kalpa?
I'm not sure.
This is Vaivasara Mandiri.
Yeah, that means whitish. The whitish, because there's the whitish boar and the reddish boar. So that's that one. Yeah, so it could be. I don't know. So it could be. Yeah, when they chant mantras. So it probably means that this is the time that the whitish incarnation, this is the day of Lord Brahma. I don't know for sure. But okay. What was the reason, O Brahmana, for the fight between the demon king and Lord Boar while the Lord was lifting the earth as his pastime? My mind has become very inquisitive, and therefore I am not satisfied with hearing the narration of the Lord's appearance. Please therefore speak more and more to a devotee who is faithful. Bharat Prabhu.
One who is actually faithful and inquisitive is qualified to hear the transcendental pastimes of the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidura was a suitable candidate to receive such transcendental messages.
So this is the qualification to hear the Bhagavata. One must be faithful and inquisitive. Faith means that when you hear, then you must have faith that what you are hearing is true. If you're coming to the Bhakti Vaibhav course, but you don't have faith that what we're discussing is true, then what is the point? You'll only come if you have faith. If there's no faith in what you're hearing, then you will not come. So this is the first qualification. One must have faith. And the next qualification mentioned is one must be
inquisitive.
It means you must desire to know. You want to know the details. You want to understand the truth about the Lord, your relationship with the Lord, and everything related to the Lord. This is inquisitive. Krishna says, Tat vidhi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya. These are the qualifications. Pari prashna means you must make inquiry. All day people are inquiring about different subject matters, but only one subject matter is important, and that is subject which is related to Krishna. Krishna Katha, Vasudev Katha, Bhagavad Katha. This is the only thing which is important. Like that. And it is said in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th chapter of the second canto, the first verse, there are 10 subject matters. And all subject matters must be related to these 10 subjects. Otherwise, the subject matter is of no value. It is Shrama Eva Hi Kevala. Like that. So this is the qualification. One must be faithful and inquisitive in the beginning. Then one can advance in one's hearing of the Bhagavad.
Put this in the last translation. Because we see the Guru as a great Vaishnava, and generally we don't expect that the Vaishnava people, they are glorifying themselves. So like, please therefore speak more and more to a devotee who is faithful. So is it not like he is glorifying himself?
Not really, because one can be objective. If one is free from false ego, one can be objective. To say, if you have faith, right? Like someone like Vidura, who has great faith, if he says, I have faith in you, Maitreya, then that's not egotistical. You know, we may say that, and we may say it from the platform of false ego, so therefore there may be contamination in our words, but there's no contamination in his content. He's just being objective, that's all. Any other points?
Yesterday, Chiranjeeva Prabhu was giving a class in the house, and he was saying that the definition of the understanding of humility is that you do whatever is required to serve. So I feel that here Vidura is doing whatever is required to serve Maitreya. Maitreya's mood is to speak about the Lord, and Vidura's mood is to hear. So I think that is the context. So there's no ego here. He's doing whatever is required to serve Maitreya.
The great sage Maitreya said, O warrior, the inquiry made by you is just befitting a devotee because it concerns the incarnation of the personality of Godhead. He is the source of liberation from the chain of birth and death for all those who are otherwise destined to die. So, Lila Mai, you like to...
We believe the Trinity of the Sudra and the warrior, not only because Sudra belongs to the Guru family, but because he was anxious to hear about the silent activities of the Lord in his incarnations of Brahma and Mahatma. Because the inquiry concerned the Lord, they were perfectly befitting a devotee. A devotee has no taste for hearing anything knowledge. There are many topics of knowledge, but a devotee is not inclined to hear them. The topics of the warfare in which the Lord engages do not concern the war of death, but the war against the chain of Maya, which obliges one to accept repeated birth and death. In other words, one who takes delight in hearing the war topics of the Lord is released from the chains of birth and death. Foolish people are suspicious of Krishna's taking part in the battle of Guru Shukra, not knowing that his taking part ensures liberation for all who are present on the battlefield. It is said by Bhishma Deva that all who are present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attain the original spiritual existences after death. Therefore, hearing the war topics of the Lord is as good as any other devotional act.
So what are the points here?
There's a distinct similarity between what Sukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Parikshit. When Maharaj Parikshit is asking certain questions, I remember having done a key verse. He says, Varyan Kesar Te Prashna. He's saying that your questions are very befitting. And these are the kind of questions that one should ask. And the same, similar theme is coming here. When Maitreya Muni is telling the questions are very befitting.
That's good. Any other points?
Anything relating to Krishna is auspicious. So when he's taking part in the war, that is also very auspicious. There should be any difference.
Did Duryodhana guard for his future existence back to?
The demons, they would merge into the Lord. It is mentioned like that. Duryodhana specifically, I'm not sure what happened to him. But
he was a higher planet.
He went to Svarga, right?
Yeah, higher planet.
Because is when Yudhishthira got the swagger to Duryodhana. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Mahabharata mentions like that.
But that's not the spiritual entity.
Generally, yeah, it's mentioned that Shishupal and the other demons merged into the Lord's body. Like that. They got Brahman Suyuja Mukti.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
So they get something like that. After Suyuja.
Yes. That's what Rupami Swami was saying on us. Because they were joining the child.
Yeah, so when they came as Jagga and Madai then.
Mm. I mean, and afterwards, I think, that was when the preliminary. I think Rupami Swami was saying something. This is what the children just put.
The topics of the war are generally very stressful to hear. When God takes a part in the war, it's extremely delightful to hear. And it becomes a source of meditation for the devotees.
So warriors like to hear about
warfare.
They like to hear about battle. Kshatriyas like to hear about Mahabharata, Ramayana. They like to hear these pastimes. Like that. It gives great pleasure. Like that. So, a devotee like Vidura, he is born in Kshatriya dynasty, in the Kuru dynasty. So he's a very powerful personality. But he has no interest to hear about any warfare unless it is directly connected with Lord Krishna. Then it becomes interesting, it becomes auspicious, it becomes purifying to the hearer. But if it is not connected to Krishna, then there's no benefit. Like that. There may be some interest, or there may be some interest in pastime, but there's no purifying factor. Now, when you hear about the Battle of Kurukshetra, in which Krishna and Arjuna are exchanging so many pastimes on the battlefield, you'll see that during the battle, so many people are dying. So normally when we hear about these kind of pastimes, these kind of topics, they have no benefit for the listener. You hear about World War I, you hear about World War II, you hear about the wars of Napoleon, you hear about the wars of Alexander the Great, or so many different personalities. But there's no benefit to the hearer. Maybe some interesting topic, but they derive no benefit. But when you hear about the topics of death, in other words, you hear about war and the soldiers that died on the battlefield. But when it's in relation to Krishna, such as the Mahabharata or the Ramayana, then what takes place is that you become released from the cycle of birth and death yourself. By hearing about these pastimes connected to Krishna, then you become liberated. You achieve mukti. You can go back to the spiritual world. But it must be in relation. So therefore he is saying, O hero, because you are a hero and you heard about the fight between... Warriors like to hear about this. So when he heard that Varahadev killed the great demon Hiranyaksha, then he wanted to hear about it because it was connected to the Lord. It would purify him. Like that. Any other point? Yeah, one will not take birth again.
Because
it is said there is a
Yuga avatar.
Mm-hmm.
By then. So just like Lord Krishna comes once in a day, Brahma,
mm-hmm.
but the other 999 times there is a blackish incarnation who will come. So Lord Brahma Dev may come more than once in a day, Brahma.
Are
I can't say. I don't know. But yeah, he may. It's possible. Any other point? That's what it says, yeah. It says that one of them killed her own nature, so.
So it didn't happen at the same time? The same.
Yeah, it happened at different times. One came as white, one came as red. Different.
I thought they did both together.
In one of the incarnations he did, yeah. In one of them he came and he killed the demon and lifted the earth. But the other one he didn't. By hearing these topics from the sage Narada, the son of King Uttanapad, Dhruva, was enlightened regarding the personality of Godhead, and he ascended to the abode of the Lord, placing his feet over the head of death.
While quitting his body, Maharaj Dhruva, the son of King Uttanapad, was attended by personalities like Sunanda and others, who received him in the kingdom of God. He left this world at an early age as a young boy, although he had attained the throne of his father and had several children of his own. Because he was due to quit this world, death was awaiting for him. He did not care for death, however, and even with his present body, he boarded a spiritual airplane and went directly to the planet of Vishnu, because of his association with the great sage Narada, who has spoken to him the narration of the pastimes of the Lord.
Mm. So what is that point? Which canto is this? That's Prahlad Maharaj.
Fourth
canto, yes. So it will come up soon. Another 2 years or so.
Does it mean that, you know, Dhruva Maharaj didn't quit his body?
No, it means he attained a spiritual form. He attained a spiritual form, and in that form he entered onto the Vaikuntha aeroplane.
I didn't understand the relevance of bringing this verse in context.
Yeah. So Maitreya is giving the example of Dhruva, because he said in the previous verse that if you hear about topics which are related to Krishna, you will get purified. You must hear about the topics only if they're related to Krishna. So he said to Vidura that you are interested in hearing about the war, but the war between the Lord and the demon. So in that way you'll become purified. So now he's giving the example of Dhruva, who heard from Narada and attained the benefit of becoming liberated, of going back to Godhead. So he heard from Narada and he received that benefit or benediction, like that. So this is the process. The process is that by hearing from pure devotees, one crosses beyond birth and death. One must hear from pure devotees of Krishna, such as Maitreya Muni, such as Narada Muni. By hearing from these kinds of personalities, then one can cross birth and death, because these personalities will always and only enlighten you about topics in relation to Krishna. And by hearing these topics, one can be cross the ocean of birth and death.
Rumara was a pure devotee. So why he went to Vaikuntha? Why not Goloka?
Because everyone in Vaikuntha is also a pure devotee. But the mood is different. The mood of the devotion in Vaikuntha is Aishwarya, and the mood of the devotion in Goloka is Madhurya. So the mood is different. But both are pure devotees. Everyone in Vaikuntha is pure devotee, everyone in Goloka is pure devotee. But the mood is different in both places. That's all.
When you were saying about Narad Muni, I was thinking, why not Prabhupada?
Because Narad Muni was mentioned in this verse. Like that. But Prabhupada, you can use as the examples.
But the same thing.
What's that?
The same thing should apply to our spiritual master as well. But he's in the line of Narad Muni.
But you'll have to read a few more verses until you get to him.
Okay.
You'll have to read a few more verses.
Again, you see a similar theme here. When in the first step towards God realization, in Canto 2, when I think Maharaj Parikshit is asking, what should a person do who is just about to die? Similar kind of instruction were given, you know, by.
Yeah, good. The Bhagavatam has been repeating this same point in the last several chapters, actually. Mm-hmm. Now, in the beginning of chapter 8, and then all these different chapters, it keeps coming up this point again and again. Right? And it keeps happening all the way through the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. In Canto 10, it happens continuously. Like that, when Shukadeva and Parikshit are speaking, then Shukadeva continuously praises Parikshit for wanting to go deeper and deeper and deeper, and becoming more and more inquisitive to hear about the pastimes of Krishna, like that. So this theme is continuously going through the Bhagavatam, like that. One must be eager to hear about Krishna. If you are not eager, then you cannot hear.
One clarification, Prabhupada says that he did not care for death. Does it mean that he transcended the death there?
Transcended death what?
When Prabhupada says that he did not care for death, does that mean that Guru Maharaj has transcended death, therefore that sentence means the question?
It means that death personified appeared, and it says in the fourth canto that he stepped on the head of death, the personality of death. He stepped on his head and entered into the Vaikuntha aeroplane.
And it's also,
he's able to see the death person. So he's able to see the death personified, and therefore he could place his feet on him and then cross over.
Yeah, so symbolically it means that he's passed beyond death. Right? But then it's also mentioned that death himself appeared in a personified form and he stepped upon his head. So it means he transcended birth and death by his bhakti, his devotion. You got a point?
What does it mean that the devotees are nervous?
Just wait.
Due to the identification with the body, one is afraid of the death, otherwise it's not afraid. One is aware that he's an eternal soul, such as Ananda, and it's no fear. And it's explained in the 20th chapter, that's one of the Tamisha. One is afraid of death because of the ignorance thinking he's the body.
What did you say, Mata? If you remember, then. This history of the fight between the Lord as a boar and the demon Hiranyaksha was heard by me in a year long ago, as it was described by the foremost of the demigods, Brahma, when he was questioned by the other demigods. So many, many years before, Maitreya has heard Lord Brahma himself speak this pastime. And now we hear the same pastime again, spoken by Maitreya Muni. That's what it says, yeah.
So,
would imagine, wouldn't you? Diti, daughter of Daksha, being afflicted with sex desire, begged her husband Kashyapa, the son of Marichi, to have intercourse with her in the evening in order to beget a child. The sun was setting and the sage was sitting in trance after offering oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, whose tongue is the sacrificial fire.
Yogi?
That's very good.
Fire is considered to be the tongue of the personality of God, Vishnu. And the oblations of grains and clarified butter offered to the fire are thus accepted by them. That is the principle of all sacrifices, of which Lord Vishnu is the master. In other words, the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu includes the satisfaction of all demigods and other living beings.
So what are the points here?
The atmosphere described in the verse, you know, just corresponds to the title of the chapter, Pregnancy of the Eagle in the Evening. And the translation speaks about the sun was setting, and the sage was sitting in the trance after offering oblations to the Supreme Lord. So the pastime is about the evening.
So what are brahmanas meant to teach us? Yeah, brahmanas are meant to teach us six things, right? How to perform the yajna, right? They themselves perform the yajna, and they teach others how to perform the yajna, right? They themselves accept the charity, and then they give the charity. Whatever they collect, if they have too much, then they give it as charity. Brahmanas will teach this. And they study the Shastra, and then they teach others what they have learned about the Shastra. Right? This is the six duties of the Brahmana. So, the Brahmanas are teaching us that Vishnu must be satisfied in all of their activities. That's why the Brahmanas are the heads of society. Because the Brahmana's duty is to constantly remind everyone and to teach everyone that Vishnu must be satisfied, Krishna must be satisfied. Right? Then human life will be successful, only when God is satisfied. So, what we see in this pastime is that Diti forgets to please Krishna, forgets to please the Lord. And when one forgets to please the Lord, everything inauspicious takes place. Right? When one puts the Lord first, right? In other words, when one follows the instructions of the Brahmanas and puts the Lord first, then there will only be auspiciousness in your life. But when you neglect the Lord and put your own sense gratification first, there will only be inauspiciousness. And that's what takes place in this chapter. The Diti and Kashyapa, they put their sense gratification in front of the Lord's pleasure, and then what takes place? Inauspiciousness. Okay. In that place, the beautiful deity expressed her desire. O learned one, Cupid is taking his arrows and distressing me forcibly, as a mad elephant troubles a banana tree. Jagannath and Prabhu.
Beautiful Diti, seeing her husband absorbed in a trance, began to speak loudly, not attempting to attract him by bodily expressions. She frankly said that her whole body was distressed by sex desire because of her husband's presence, just as a banana tree is troubled by a mad elephant. It was not natural for her to agitate her husband when he was in a trance, but she could not control her strong sexual appetite. Her sex desire was like a mad elephant, and therefore it was the prime duty of her husband to give her all protection by fulfilling her desire.
So this begins the instructions on Grihastha Dharma. Very important. Monday night.
Tonight is the beginning, but Monday night we'll get into some very instructive verses about this subject matter. So what are the points here?
The sex desire is so powerful that it can overcome the enlightened personality like Didi. Although Didi apparently is said to have behaved against the principles of the religion, which is otherwise the daughter of Daksha. She is very much well enlightened and she is having the association of Saint Kashyap. Here the Srila Bhagavad is teaching us that sexual desire is so strong that it can really overcome basically the consciousness of a person. And there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavad Gita that one endeavoring to control the senses, he can be used as taken away as the board is dismissed away by the way.
Many verses in the Gita warn us about these points. Any other point?
I see. The state was so powerful. So, if there was something wrong, then he should have convinced her that it is wrong.
So then we'll hear about this in the next few verses, what takes place. All this will be wrong.
Medical science says that sex is the next most irresistible thirst only after water. Which is obvious that a person loses control because it's the most irresistible thing.
But I think if you give most men the option between a woman and a glass of water, I think I know which one they will take.
It depends on what time they're asking.
That's true, isn't it? That's true.
I'm not quoting medical science.
Then the guru has spoken. Any other points?
Vishwamitra saw this. Vishwamitra was in meditation and he heard the sound. And the sound said again that she spoke loudly here and then spoke from
the ankle belt
of Menaka.
That was the sound.
Yeah, that Prabhupada mentions that in the next section of it. This is Monday night. This verse is on Monday night. It's in the next section of the Bhagavad Gita. This verse, this exact verse, which you just mentioned.
So the last statement, that the prime duty of a husband to give all protection, to give her all protection by fulfilling her desire. Now, four Kumaras declined to follow the instructions of the great father for the high purpose. If the wife is acting against the principles of the religion, shouldn't husband basically, actually advise her, basically, not for it's a very strong statement, that the strong desire should be fulfilled.
Yeah, so this will be mentioned in the next few verses. Prabhupada explains this point. Okay. So this is the first verse describing this section of the Grihastha Dharma. Now, the general principle is that the husband and wife are meant to help each other go back to Godhead. This is the teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam. If the husband and wife are not assisting each other in going back to Godhead, then the relationship is material. The relationship only becomes spiritual or meaningful if the husband and wife are cooperating to assist each other to realize their actual spiritual identity. Jivara Srupa Hoy Krishnara Nitya Das. If this is not being achieved, then the relationship is simply material. And as long as the relationship is material, then one is not fulfilling the mission of the human form of life. It is not meant that the husband and wife are meant to enjoy each other for sense gratification. The general principle is that the wife stops the husband from going backwards, and the husband assists the wife in going forwards. Meaning that the men have stronger attachment to gross sex life. Women have, this is general, this is not 100%, this is in general. Women generally have stronger attachment to subtle sex life. It means that they're more attached to what the man provides for the woman. The security, the maintenance, the material possessions, the subtle flattery which is given by the man to the woman. But the men are more strongly attached to the gross act of sex. It's the nature of the male form. The nature of the female form is to be more attached to the subtle sexual activities. The nature of the male form is to be attached more to the gross sexual activity. So, the woman, in terms of marriage, is to protect the husband so that the husband does not become overwhelmed by his gross attachment to sex life. In other words, even if the husband is desiring sex life, the woman, the wife, will protect the husband. And she will instruct him, this is not the right time. Right? So in this way she protects him from going backwards. Because when you break the regulative principles, when one engages in illicit sex life, one's consciousness is led away from Krishna. One forgets Krishna. One goes back into the material consciousness. So the wife's duty is to stop the husband from going back, to stop both of them from going backwards, away from Krishna. And the husband is meant, as in this example of Diti and Kashyapa, he's a great sage, so he is meant to instruct her and take her forward in spiritual life. This is the traditional system. The husband associates with the guru. In the traditional system, the wife or the women did not so much associate with the guru. They associated with the guru pati. In other words, they saw the husband as the guru's representative. The guru would instruct the husband, and the husband would then instruct the wife on the guru's behalf. So he led her back home, back to Godhead. That was the traditional system. Of course, in Kali Yuga, things are a little not exactly like it was before. Sometimes we see that the wife is taking the husband back to Godhead. She is the one who's giving more inspiration. She is spiritually stronger. Traditionally, you'll see, back in times, like when you're dealing with personalities in Vedic times, in previous times, like Kashyapa and Diti, you'll see Kashyapa will be the spiritually more focused personality. But this may not, it doesn't always mean like that. It's not always like that, even in previous times also. Generally you may say it is like that, but it is not always like that. But still this is the general principle, that the husband is meant to set the example for the wife to go back to Godhead. Right? And the wife is meant to protect the husband's senses so that they do not degress, or how do you say it?
Degrade.
Yeah, degrade. Well, there's... Degress is a word, yeah. But I mean, I think trying to think of another word to explain. So they do not go backwards like that. The wife is meant to protect the husband so they do not regress back into material life. Because if one breaks the regulative principles, one will go back into material life. You'll see many devotees fell victim to this point. They were attached to illicit sex and they lost their spiritual standing, and then they became very materialistic.
like that. There's many examples we'll see. So there has to be great cooperation between husband and wife to make sure that as a mutual team, they assist each other in progressing back to the spiritual platform.
Can I ask you something, Prabhu? You're mentioning Bhagavad Gita says, so if this is like Krishna tells us Bhagavad Gita that it is dharma between the husband and wife, but you're saying relationship. So,
I don't understand.
You're telling the word illicit, no?
Yeah.
So, but husband and wife, then it is like not illicit.
This is in the next verse.
At the end of the day, it is the will of the Lord. The Lord wanted it to happen like this.
No, not entirely, because the conditioned soul always has his independence. Everyone has independence.
But he's so strong, he will make you do whatever he wants.
Yeah, but that's not what's happening here. Krishna is not making Diti do this and Kashyapa do this. Yeah, so then the Lord sees now, the Lord is very intelligent. So the Lord desires for Jayant Vijay to take birth. And he sees there's an opportunity there, so then the Lord arranges that it takes place. Maybe, but there's no, Prabhupada doesn't say anything like that in the purport. So. Therefore, you should be kind towards me by showing me complete mercy. I desire to have sons, and I am very much distressed by seeing the opulence of my co-wives. By performing this act, you will become happy. So, Hari Priya, can you read this one?
In Bhagavad Gita section, when the court for devotee children is accepted as righteous, a person's actually intent for simple sense gratification, however, is unrighteous. In Diti's appeal, though her husband was his age, it was not exactly that she was affected by such desire, but she desired sons. Since she had no sons, she felt poorer than her co-wives. Therefore, Kashyapa was supposed to satisfy her
as
bona fide wife.
So Prabhupada is making the point here that it is not simply that she's desiring sex, but she wanted children. There was many wives. Kashyapa was one of the progenitors, one of the Prajapatis. So it was his duty to populate the universe. He had many wives, and each one of them had the opportunity to have children up until this point. But Diti had no children at this point. So it is not that she simply desired sex, but she desired to have children. And for a woman, this is very, psychologically, this is very important for women to have children. The husband must fulfill this desire. If the woman has this desire, the husband must fulfill this desire. Right? It's improper for the husband to deny this desire of the wife, if that is her desire. Otherwise, do not get married. Don't get married, and then if the wife says, I want to have children, say, well, you know, where does that say that in the contract? It is in the contract, right? It is the nature of the creation. In Grihastha Ashram, the husband must satisfy that desire of the wife. It is not proper to deny the wife if she has that desire to have children. They must be there. However, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sex life must be according to
religious principles.
So it means that the husband and wife are allowed to try to procreate once a month for the purpose of procreation, to have children. Otherwise, sex life is abstained from. Right? It means that even if you're married, right, sex life within marriage, which is not to have children, not to procreate, is considered illicit sex. Yeah? There should be no confusion on this point. Like that. Sometimes the Grihasthas or Grihamedis or Grihasthas, even devotees, they may consider that within marriage the husband and wife can have sex and that is okay. If you're on the platform of taking initiation from a spiritual master,
At the time of initiation, you must bow when you take diksha to chant 16 rounds and to follow four regulative principles, one of which is to have no illicit sex. And this is what it means, obviously. It should not be confused. Sometimes, you know, there's pseudo philosophies that go around ISKCON. You know, there's Ritvik philosophy, and there's this philosophy, and there's that philosophy, and Gopi Bhav philosophy, and then another philosophy comes that it's okay for husband and wife to have sex, even if it is not to procreate a child. But that is not what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching. That is not Krishna's definition of dharmic sex life. So this must be understood. These things should not be misconstrued or misrepresented. Right? If devotees cannot follow this standard, right, then do not get married. Do not get initiated. Right? Don't get initiated. If you cannot follow that standard, then do not get initiated. Just like you'll see within the Bhakti Vriksha system, they have different levels of ashraya, or taking shelter. Right? I can't remember all the details, but like 1 round a day, 2 round a day, 4 round a day, 8 rounds a day, and 3 regulative principles. Right? So this means there's some concession there, like that. But if you take to the platform of 16 rounds a day, and you want to take initiation, right, in Guru Padashraya, if you want to take shelter of a spiritual master, and then you take your vows at the time of initiation, you must follow those vows. Otherwise, do not take initiation. Otherwise, the spiritual master may become implicated in karma. The spiritual master may suffer because of the disciples' inappropriate activities. So therefore, if you're not careful, obviously.
Sincere.
Be careful, yes.
Sincere.
But be, yeah, sincere also. But
sure.
Be
determined.
Yeah, and be determined.
Sure.
And please be serious, and also be sure. Make sure you're all these things. But do not be hypocritical, right? Do not be duplicit, right? It's not proper, right? If you cannot follow, no problem. If you cannot follow, these are high standards, like that. But if you are going to follow the standard, if you're going to take initiation, then follow properly, right? 16 rounds a day on beads, not on clicker, not while driving car, right? Not while, well, you know, so many compromises, right? Do it properly, right? And follow the four regulative principles. Okay. That's the system. Don't compromise. Do not water down these standards. If they become watered down, the movement becomes weak.
Well, yesterday in our Srimati Riksha, Devaki Madani was giving a class, and she mentioned an interesting point about chanting. She says that if you chant on the fingers, then her spiritual master had made a very strong statement that you are only getting 25% of the benefit. So although Srila Prabhupada toned down the chanting stand from 64 to 16, those who chant on the fingers should actually chant 64 rounds. If they would actually comply with basically not the rule of chanting 16 rounds.
I always chant 64 on my clicker. Always. And if I chant on the left hand, I chant 108. Get a point?
Prabhu, can I ask you one question? So if the husband and wife relationship is not very strong, there are chances that the behavior of the partners, if they are not very fixed, then there are chances of getting attracted outside. So rather than getting attracted to outside Maya, is it better that husband and wife can get attracted to each other? That's better?
It means that if, as we just said, if they're initiated, then that's not acceptable.
But if there is a Maya attraction and they are problem, then husband and wife can get attracted to each other. That's better.
If they're not initiated.
Not initiated. So Maya also, you should not get attracted to, or then husband and wife also, you should not get attracted to.
Then you should live separately. One of you go to India, one of you stay in Australia.
No, I'm not talking about myself. I'm not talking. I'm talking like, Like, what about Maya?
Next verse. I gave my answer. A woman is honored in this world by the benediction of her husband, and a husband like you will become famous by having children because you are meant for the expansion of living entities. So we'll read the purport. Mathura, can you read that?
According to Rishabhadeva, one should not become a father or mother unless one is confident that he can beget children whom he can deliver from the clutches of birth and death. Human life is the only opportunity to get out of the material sense, material scene, which is full of the miseries of birth, death, old age and diseases. If every human being should be given the opportunity to take advantage of his human form of life, and a father like Kashyapa is supposed to beget good children for the purpose of liberation.
So this was the purpose why God created procreation. It is meant to beget Krishna conscious progeny. That is the point. It is not just to enjoy one's senses and then by accident the wife became pregnant. That is not the point. The point is not even just to beget children. Sex life is not just to have a family. Sex life is meant to create progeny that you can then encourage and inspire and set the example for and try to lead on the path to go back home, back to Godhead. That is the point. That is the responsibility. That is responsible sex life. In this world, we see in modern society, sex life is so irresponsible. They have children, but they don't look after the children properly. And even if they look after the children materially, but there's no spiritual protection, no spiritual inspiration. The point of sex life is that you will create children and then you will teach those children how to go back home, back to Godhead. That is responsible sex life. That's what it was like previously. These days it's so... Kali Yuga, everyone's consciousness is so contaminated. Many of us struggle with sex desire. We have great struggle with sex desire. It may become less over time, but devotees may struggle with sex desire. Right? But previously, there wasn't even so much struggle because people's consciousness was pure and people understood this is the purpose of sex life. Whereas now, by the time devotees become devotees, they have like a struggle between is sex life for dharma or is it for sense gratification? Mm-hmm. And devotees can struggle with this for years and years and years. That's...
When you take a parent's responsibility to lead the children back to Godhead, then there's no guarantee, you know, that the child will go back to Godhead, because although your desire was to beget children so that the child goes back to Godhead, and you may try to, you know, interface the child, but there's no guarantee. So then that sex life was not valid if the child did not take to Krishna consciousness, let's say, when the child grew up or something like that, or if the parents didn't do their duty properly.
No. You did everything you can, but every living entity has their own free will. So you did everything you could, but it's their choice at the end of the day. The mother and the father set the best example they can, but then you have to let the children. Chanakya says between 5 and 15, you're strict. Before 5, you're not strict. Right? From 5 to 15, you're strict on the child, because that's when the child is formed. After 15, then it's his choice. You can't force them anymore. After 15, they're young adults. That's it. Now they have to make their own choice. They'll take Krishna if they desire. But they'll take Krishna if they see the good example of their parents. Like that. But they may take to Krishna according to a different level than what you desire them to. They may not be as strict as you were. What can you do? Like that. Kali Yuga is very contaminating, so it's very hard. Chanakya says that, but I think when he was speaking, that was quite a few hundred years ago. Like that. It's probably not so... It may not be exactly relevant now.
But I thought that Deva Goswami once mentioned in a class, he even if they've strayed around 28, 29, they'll come back to this if they've had a kind of a background upbringing. So
many times we've seen that happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we may think that 20, they're not Krishna conscious, but I think around when they come to 20,
quite often they'll come back. And if you keep one big stick, then usually it works. In the long run. Okay. In days long ago, our father, the most opulent Daksha, who was affectionate to his daughters, asked each of us separately whom we would prefer to select as our husband. Mm. So this is Vedic culture, that the woman is always protected. She's protected in the beginning of her life by her father, then she's given to her husband, and then at the end of her life, if the husband passes away or if he renounces, then the son will look after her. So in the Vedic culture, free association between the sexes was prohibited. And it wasn't that the boys and girls would just go down to the corner, right, and then they would meet each other, and then, you know, they come back. Or university, you met at university, it was a love match. Like that. In India they call it the love marriage. You met at university and you loved each other and you used to go to the movies together and then you got married. So that was not there in the Vedic culture. There was no free association, right? It was very strict that the boys and girls, they could not associate freely. Right, and what's happening here is Daksha is speaking to Diti, his daughter, and he's saying, who would you like to marry? You can marry anyone in the universe. You want someone from another planet? No problem with that. So Diti says, I would like to marry Kashyapa. So Prabhupada points out that she gave her preference, but still the final decision came down to the father. And that was how much the parents cared for the children. And that's how much the children respected the parents, that they would give the choice to the parent. These days, it's very rare that you'll find this, that the parent will say, you should marry this one, and the child will follow. Very rare. I would not have done it. If my mother and father said, you should marry this one, I would say, I do not think so. But previously it was like that. Previously there was so much connection. Right? We saw between Manu and Brahma, and we saw between Diti and Daksha. There was so much respect and affection between parents and children that these things actually took place and everyone was satisfied.
There are two stages. Maruchi and Ruchi. What's the relationship?
I'm not sure the relationship, but they're both great sages.
Maruchi is the son of Brahma, the 10 sages. But Ruchi is the one who went there when he got attracted to the daughter.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know a lot about him, Guruji, but he's a great sage.
He got married to Kuti,
He's one of the great sages from the beginning of the universe, like that. So he's a very powerful person.
Or this one is one of the 10.
He probably is, yeah, but I'm not sure what's mentioned. Our well-wishing father, Daksha, after knowing our intentions, handed over 13 of his daughters unto you, and since then we have all been faithful. O lotus-eyed one, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. O hero, Vidura, Diti, being thus afflicted by the contamination of lust, and therefore poor and talkative, was pacified by the son of Marichi in suitable words. Kashyapa.
Hasn't already been mentioned earlier that it wasn't lust, it was her for a son, right? Why is it mentioned as lust here?
Because there's some sense gratification there. Even though the desire for the son is there, but still there is some, it's like it's material consciousness, like that. There's some compromise, because Kashyapa says to her, we should wait, like that. So it's materialistic, there's a lot of motivation there, like that. So we're seeing here that if one becomes compromised in one's consciousness, then one will succumb to the offerings of Maya. So Kashyapa, Diti is saying, I want a child, I want to have a child now. And Kashyapa should control his wife. Right? No, this is not the right time. You must wait. But because there's sense gratification in his consciousness, then he succumbs to the situation. He compromises. Right? So he compromises and she is compromised, and then what is the result? Yeah. The two biggest demons in history. So this is because there's compromise in their consciousness. So this is the opposite to the, what a devotee will be like. Right? We saw that Haridas Thakur, the most famous example, the most purest devotee, he was approached by Maya Devi herself. And when Maya Devi approached Haridas Thakur and said, please satisfy my desires, he said, I will surely satisfy your desire, but let me finish my rounds. But he chanted 192 rounds a day. So by the time he finished, she said, now please satisfy my desire. And he said, I will surely do it, but now I have to finish today's rounds. Another 300,000 names of God, another 192 rounds. So she waited one more day. He was chanting all day, all day, all day. She began to chant because she was hearing his chanting. And then it happened a third time again. He said, just one more day, let me finish. And then by the end of it, she was so purified by his association, she gave up all of her attachment like that. So this is the position of a devotee. A devotee should be so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he would not succumb to the offerings of Maya. And this means you have to become very exalted, very pure hearted. We are not on this level yet. Like that. So we have to be very careful in our consciousness. O afflicted one, I shall forthwith gratify whatever desire is dear to you. For who else but you is the source of the three perfections of liberation? So we'll stop there. And on Monday night, we will read verses, I think it's 18 to 24, around about that. And we'll discuss further these very instructive verses for the association between Grihasthas and Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki.